We're going to take questions for about 15 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes. One of the questions that had actually come from the audience is, explain what a seam or seams agreement is and why is it necessary? Well, a seam in South Dakota, the MISO seam, the Midwest ISO, which is an agreement, that's that country club we had spoke about earlier. That seam in South Dakota is actually about at I-29, Interstate 29. So if you look at wind development on the east side of that seam, you tend to notice that it's a little bit heavier than it is on the west side. That's not per se because they're building it because they're in the MISO seam. There's less people on the west side. Obviously, you get into up by Aberdeen, out West River, there's just less people. So what that seam does is that you've got certain power districts or companies that have decided to join. They're on one side of the table. You've got a company like Jeff Nelson over here who is giving very good service to his customers, and he's on the other side of the seam. He chooses not to join. Well, just like that golf course analogy, if you want to come into that MISO or go into the seam, across the seam, you're going to pay a tariff to go across the line. Just as though there was a line in the sand, you're on this side, and I have a cookie to sell. I made it in South Dakota. I jump across this seam. Now I'm in another situation. It's not another state, but in just another territory. That cookie, it cost you 25 cents to sell it in South Dakota. It just cost you 30 cents to jump across that seam. That's what the seams are for. That's why it's controversial. And that's why are they necessary? I wouldn't say they're necessary, but I would say that they're there because of industry's demand for power and demand for collaboration on issues. That's why it was done. And actually, the FERC is who gave MISO the authority to begin, correct? That came from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. So I hope that answers your question. With that, we have another one. Okay. To our panelists, the first question is, recognizing that MISO is a stakeholder-driven organization, what needs to be done to get South Dakota entities to join MISO and reduce barriers to wind integration? All right, and I think, Jeff, you had touched on that, so how about we'll just go backwards here.
Change MISO's pricing model to average pricing rather than license plate pricing. That's the simple answer. All of these discussions about seams agreements and RECBs and different techniques are really a strategy of conducting this discussion from hedgerow to hedgerow. If we want to solve the problem, we've got to understand the historic as well as practical differences between what the MISO footprint is and who they serve as compared to the much less populated, much less load serving requirements that clearly create cost differentials. And in our opinion, there is no good reason that the rural customers in this state should pay a higher price to benefit the high population areas that constitute what MISO looks like. Average pricing.
All right, thank you. Robert?
I don't think I can expand on that. I guess I could point back to the fact that regionally, and I explained the footprint of crossing seven states, we as a federal agency believe that that was the way to do the pricing when we began the JTS, as Jeff mentioned earlier, and also when we moved to the IS, or integrated system, when open access defined a little bit different model than we were using under the joint transmission system prior to that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I guess I agree with what Jeff and Bob has said. If you recall in my presentation, I did talk about pancake transmission, and that is, when you pay two or more transmission providers, a way to get rid of that is go to average pricing or postage stamp pricing. Having said that, I guess the questioner also noted that MISO is a stakeholder process. You have to recognize that while the three of us may agree that we should move to an average transmission pricing, there are also many entities to the east of here that oppose that type of transmission pricing. So it is a stakeholder process, and everybody gets their to put in their 2 cents worth into that process. And right now, MISO has not changed its tariff from the current arrangement, which we refer to as license plate pricing. It does maintain the pancake transmission, to a postage stamp type of pricing. So consequently, there are others that disagree with where we're at. So again, the solutions are not simple or easy.
While we have very little electric territory in South Dakota, I would say, I'm not sure that average pricing is necessarily the simple answer. I think it is complicated. Each entity has to look at it from a business perspective, basically. And we have looked at it in terms of what would the impact be on our customers if we were to join MISO. To this point, we have not done so as a result of that. Doesn't mean that we won't at some point. I think certainly we have experienced some of the same pressures that others have being outside of MISO, where we're having a little more difficulty making transactions, both selling power and buying power. And so from that standpoint, we may be starting to look at this a little bit differently. But it is a business decision, and the companies are, whether they're publicly owned or investor-owned, basically have to look out for their customers and make the choice that's best for their customer base.
All right. A question that I had, and anybody that would like to, please come up to the microphone. But my question is more focused on cost recovery. In cost recovery, we know that baseload plants will run for 30, 40, 50 years. Should cost recovery methods be different for wind, since we do not know what wind machines' production to cost ratio is? And then there's a second part to that question, and that is, would joining MISO make these cost recovery decisions easier on consumers and on companies, or is it easier to make that decision on your own? Easy one.
Well, certainly you're going to treat wind turbines different than you would probably other baseload plants. I mean, we're looking at something probably in the neighborhood of a 20-year life compared to something that's maybe in excess of 40 years for, like, say, a coal plant. So that certainly does impact how you're looking at them and how you're recovering the cost. You're going to have to do it over a shorter period of time. Whether joining MISO is going to help that pricing or not, I don't know that it really has an impact other than your ability to sell the power to get your cost back from customers that are willing to buy it. I mean, MISO basically establishes a market, and so you're either in the market and you can easily bid your wind in, or you're out of the market, and you can still bid it in, but it's a little bit more difficult, and the transmission becomes even more of an issue when you're outside, because if you're in the market, they'll automatically redispatch in order to make everything work. If you're out of the market, you don't necessarily get redispatched. You might just get cut off so that you can't get the transmission service, and that's really, I think the advantage of being in the market is that you have a better opportunity to actually make the sale.
The question refers to cost recovery for transmission, correct?
Yes. You can talk about transmission if you'd like to, Ray, but I was more focused on the actual investment in the wind turbine.
In that case, well, I will mention cost recovery for transmission. Is what I see is the load should pay for all the transmission costs. That is because, after all, the generation is built to serve the load, and therefore the load should pay for all transmission costs under an average pricing stream. And I know We actually have a disagreement up here between the panelists, and that's not unexpected, because that is the difficulty in terms of the transmission issues for cost recovery. In terms of cost recovery for the actual generation equipment themselves, what I'd say is it really follows more of the the straight financial, the typical financial markets in terms of cost recovery. If we do it under a PPA, it typically is a 20-year or maybe a 25-year PPA, in which the owner of the wind generation recovers their cost in their profit over that 20 or 25 years. When we build a baseload facility, we typically have financing arrangements that will recover the cost over a 35-year period because it is a longer life asset. And of course, all those costs, if you will, then compose our rate that we charge to the communities that we serve.
Thank you. And Robert.
Okay, I think I understand the question. It concerns the recovery of the wind units. Speculation was that you can take 40 or 50 years to recover the cost of a thermal unit, let's say, and should there be a different recovery for wind units? Looking down the panel here, other than myself, who's doing cost recovery for the federal government, if you will, for the construction of hydro units, most of these people take their risks and define their cost recovery based on their current customers. They're taking a risk out there for those customers to ensure that they have a reliable service. I'm sure they're probably looking at the life of service of a wind unit when they do it themselves. I expect that Steve's question relates more to a speculative plant in the sense that you would construct it and determine whether you're going to sell it into the market. The folks that are sitting on this panel are generally faced with customers that will be there with them for 40 or 50 years or 20 years if that's what the recovery is. A speculative buyer would prefer to sign a contract for that length of time to ensure that the risk doesn't fall on themselves. I would venture to say that if we join, if the whole area was in the MISO market, you probably don't want to be near us. We're relatively low-cost generating units. The LMP prices are defined by your neighbors and yourself, of course, but under the LMP pricing model, you will be paid what we are being paid. And so if we're bidding in at relatively minor prices in the generation stack, and MISO is dispatching those generation units, they're going to dispatch up to a level, let's say, above us, but probably because we're in the mix, we probably drag down the average, if you will, especially for our portion of the country. And so therefore, if you're a wind unit that's close to us, the LMP price for that point, if you were just taking the risk on constructing a plant based on the LMP price, you would prefer to have higher cost units next door to you.
All right. With that, I have to give a little bit of a commercial, and then we'll end this panel. This last week, the South Dakota PUC actually launched a new initiative called SDEnergySmart.com. Please write that down. There's been some talk over here from Lanny and some other people about fossil fuels and plants, and I think what the general gist, I think, is what they're trying to get away with is that we need maybe not focus on build, but also save. And there is some energy efficiency things in that website. SDEnergySmart.com, one of the things that applies to the holidays, if you have 10 strings of C7 light bulbs and you run that for 8 hours a day and you do that for 30 days, that's going to cost you about 8.5 cents a kilowatt. It's going to cost you about $127 to run those lights. If you use the new LED lights, the same amount, same time, it's about 72 cents. So there's two things that we're actually talking about. It's saving electricity at SDEnergySmart.com, and it's also about what the new generation is. And I know that kind of plays into some people's minds when they came up here and talked about that. So with that, I'd like to thank Commissioner Johnson for that. He put in hundreds and hundreds of hours to put that together, And then Commissioner Hansen and I actually take all the credit for it. So, thank my panel. Thank all of you. Yeah.